This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so Seth, I'm looking at a tweet from our colleague Landry Locker, who said last night, actually, that when the picture started surfacing of James Harden working out in the desert, and it is a much, much trimmer James Harden. And if you read the article in The Athletic about his workouts that he's been, Kelly Iko did an article where he's talking about James Harden's workouts, where he went and he got with his trainer and with a friend of his that he played with at ASU, a few other people it looks like are in some of these pictures, and they started doing just these crazy workouts, like multiple workouts a day, running this mountain in the desert and things like that. And James Harden looks thin. Like, James Harden has never looked out of shape, but he's got a body type that he can, depending on how his uniform is fitting him, he can look a little heavy at times.
He's smooth.
He's smooth. To use your word, he's smooth. Not in these pictures, he's not smooth. He is trim in these pictures. And Landry's tweet was, "My body type analysis expert leader is Seth Payne. I look forward to him breaking down the impact this will have on the end of the 2019-20 season with Sean Pendergast tomorrow morning." Tomorrow morning is here, Seth. What will the impact be of James Harden looking like he's in the best shape of his career?
I'm going to say this. For one, I think people are kind of selectively looking at one single photo.
Ah, crap!
I would look at another couple photos in this article. Like, the one that caught everybody's attention isn't even actually in this article, but it does. He looks almost gaunt in that photo, right? Like, it looks like he's really angular. It looks like his cheeks are sunken. I think part of it is that his beard looks like maybe he just doused himself with water or something. So his beard looks very ratty. He looks like he's been on a lifeboat for like 30 days.
He's in a picture walking down a hill.
Yeah.
With like three people around him. And the way he looks in that picture, it looks like the three other people in the picture might have rescued him from that mountain.
Yes. Yes.
Like he got stranded.
Right. Or if you're, you know, like Ocho is watching The Last Kingdom alongside me.
Right.
You know, it looks like they've been out in battle like in medieval times almost or something.
Yeah.
And they're haggard. They haven't eaten and slept in weeks. And they're just walking along on their last gasp. I think that's part of it. Because there's another couple photos in this article where he's like, he's setting up for a shot as he's also joking and laughing around. He looks like chiseled there. He looks very, very muscular. There's another photo in here where he's running and he looks like kind of lean, like a basketball player would. I think that if he's lost any weight, there's two things that could happen. One is maybe it's really, really good for him given that they're playing uber small ball and they looked like they were worn down, right? They looked like they were tired and exhausted by the time that the pandemic hit.
They were just for context, they were 1-4 in the last five games before the pandemic, and the games weren't close. Like they were the losses, they were routinely behind by double digits at the end of the first quarter.
So we're trying to figure out what the hell's gonna go on if you're gonna play small ball through the playoffs if they're this haggard in the regular season. So maybe it helps him with that. Maybe he's able to run and run and run. So we don't know because it's a different, like, he's never tried to play an entire playoff series or an entire playoffs at a lighter body weight. The other thing that could happen is that maybe it takes him too much out of his game. Maybe the strength and power that help make him such a great driver.
Yeah.
Maybe that leaves him a little bit, but that's relatively easy. Like it's one thing to gain new muscle. That's really hard. That takes a whole lot of time and effort. To get back to where you once were it's not hard at all. You bounce right back. So, like, if he needs to, if he comes back and after a week realizes, like, oh, I'm just getting knocked around too much, then he can just gain it back. So I think this can only be a positive development.
Yeah,
I think that the skill on the roster will get them through their first round of the playoffs if they go immediately back into the playoffs, and he'll be able to figure out where he should be.
I'm trying to remember the last time James Harden looked like this. You know, say get back to where you once were. Like, I can't – when he came out of Arizona State, I was not wild about James Harden as an NBA prospect because he had kind of a funky-looking body and a weird playing style that I didn't know would translate real well. Now, he has certainly added – various things to his repertoire. It feels like every year for the last 10 years he's added something new. So James works on his game. And I think that's the thing I like about this, just the knowledge that this is how James Harden is going about the pandemic, Seth, is that this should have been a dead issue 2-3 years ago. This should have been a dead issue since the season that Dwight Howard was finally gone, because James Harden works hard in the offseason. He works hard on his game. He had that one offseason post-Dwight or maybe pre-Dwight where he kept showing up on TMZ, kind of bumbling around Los Angeles and bumping into cars and things like that. He works really, really – I say bumping into cars, like he's, you know, like walking around in the street. And I just remember this one video where he, you know, he went to open an SUV to get into it like a limo, and he's like goes shoulder first into the side of it. And, he was clearly inebriated in the video. That narrative should be dead by now. It should be dead already. This, to me – kills it on site. He's working out 2 or 3 times a day, and look how he looks.
What was that? I can't remember which writer it was. I think he called it, he has that permanent resting Harden face, which it makes him, there's something about him where people don't want to recognize how refined his game is or how hard you must have to work to get a refined game like that. And I think it really is a lot to do with the fact that it never looks like he's working hard. Sean, what do I tell young kids all the time? It's not enough to win the wind sprint.
Yeah.
You have to have a look of agony on your face as you win the wind sprint, because coaches, fans, everybody, they are suckers for a narrative.
Yeah.
They are suckers for, like, oh, tell me about the adversity you overcame. Tell me how hard it was. Because Harden kind of always has this passive look on his face, I think it leads people to believe he's lazy. And it's to his benefit at this point. I don't think any NBA players think that he's lazy. Like, they understand it. They see him. They're there in LA and Las Vegas playing with him in the offseason.
Yeah, they know.
So this could help a lot, because you hear other stories about some NBA players that haven't even shot a basketball since they've been out. He's working out 3 times a day, James Harden.
Well, and unfortunately, he plays in a sport that seems to really be in a very slow mode in terms of getting back. They had a conference call yesterday. I got to go find the tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski. They had this is from Woj 13 hours ago. So last night, yesterday evening, the NBA PA's Michelle Roberts is conducting team-by-team conference calls with players detailing talks with NBA on formats resuming play in Orlando, financial implications of those options, and gathering feedback. Michelle Roberts went on to say after the conference calls that players are getting antsy. They want some clarity on things. They want some definitive timeframes. The timeframes for the NBA, Seth, when I see the direction everything's going, is, and I think this probably plays to how cautious Adam Silver's been. He was the first commissioner to shut everything down. They're looking at mid to late July to getting everything started, and I'm thinking to myself, that's a long way off. And selfishly, I'm thinking to myself, if this is the shape that James Harden is in, I want them to start playing next week. I feel I feel like this is a small incremental advantage that the Rockets might have if their best player, one of the 5 best players in the league, is in incredible, incredible cardio shape.
The thing is, everybody, if they go directly to the playoffs or to a play-in tournament or something like that, I feel like most of the other good players in the league are going to have at least one warm-up series. You know, the good teams are going to have a warm-up series. And by the second round, they'll be in pretty good shape. But that doesn't necessarily get your body ready for the rigors of play. And you might see a whole lot of injuries in that second round. I think a lot of guys will come back out and gut it out or be in basketball shape kind of and figure they'll get themselves there in the first round. That second round, you might start seeing a whole lot of hamstrings and groins and soft tissue stuff.
That would be one thing, Seth, if it were the 2018 Rockets. The 2020 Rockets are the 6th seed right now. You know what I mean? Like, They can use all the help they can get early on in the playoffs, you know, if they were to go straight to the postseason.
I guess Russell Westbrook would be another guy that would be least likely in the NBA to come back out of shape, right?
Right. I would assume so.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like, Westbrook's not...
Because he does not have the resting Harden face.
No.
Russell Westbrook looks like... Even if he's not working hard, he's somebody who can dupe a lot of the audience into thinking he works hard because he looks angry all the time.
I swear. Honestly, as good as the beard has been for James Harden's marketability, I feel like the lack of facial expressions have hurt him in some respects.
No doubt.
It's between that and the drawing of fouls, the step back threes. There's a whole lot of different things that are very attackable about him. Yep. Like, we here in Houston don't mind it, but I can totally get and see and understand looking at it from the outside. I could totally see myself attacking him on those series, the same things. If I didn't watch the game closely, like, there are a whole lot of people that it's very easy to just kind of do the drive by on James Harden without understanding all the nuances to everything in his game.
So Seth just mentioned, do they start the playoffs right away? Do they have a little bit of regular season? What does that all look like? The NBA is asking its constituency, including the general managers, the same thing. What format does the NBA settle on? They need to decide soon. We'll go through the choices next. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. Text message, maybe part of the new normal should be a month off between the regular season and the playoffs. That way we get a very healthy group of players all across the NBA for the playoffs.
They already do it for the NBA awards. They take like 3 months off before you actually give the MVP awards and whatnot.
Well, they do it in college football. You know, the college football title is decided with a month in between the regular season and the postseason.
Yet another thing that's so dumb. For the kids, we have to preserve these kids, which also includes having them practice for 4 weeks and missing their Christmas vacation for the kids, you know, for their benefit and welfare.
Right. Yeah, they have finals, Seth. I don't know if you know that. They've got to study for finals. I guess my response, and this leads into what we're going to talk about in this segment, just my quick response to that texter would be, does anybody feel that the quality of play in the postseason is an issue in the NBA?
That would be the reason why you would do it, right?
Like, if you felt the quality of play is diminished because the players aren't healthy, I don't feel that way when I watch playoff basketball.
Well, especially the last few years, because if anything, it's like the teams themselves, you know, Greg Popovich would rather lose 5 regular season games at the end of the year, even if it affects their seeding, so they can be healthy when they go into the postseason. So, yeah,
I think
it's a good idea, though. Hey, Sean, we're brainstorming here, man.
Yeah.
No bad ideas in brainstorming.
No, I'm cool. No, to be clear.
We're making fun of this guy, Sean.
No, I'm not. I'm bringing up the counterpoints to this whole thing.
During the break, you called him a sissy.
That's not true. I didn't call him a sissy, a pansy, or a Nancy, or a Sally, or any of these other words that you like to. I didn't call him any of those things. I would say that the first round would be kind of sloppy, actually, if you gave players a month off. You know what I mean?
That's true. Well, yeah, kind of. And that's what football coaches worry about. It's okay, we don't play football for a month.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're going to play again. You actually have to factor that into your game plan, the potential sloppiness.
You got mistake. I was calling you all those things. I wasn't calling the texter all those things.
You do it. You just do it. That's your little thing you do to where you don't confront me directly.
Right.
You've got an imaginary friend who's actually me. Jim, you're so stupid, Jim. You big moron.
I mutter under my breath and stare at the text page so you think that I'm saying it to a texter. That's how I do it. So the NBA, Seth, is looking at a ton of different options when it comes to how they're going to do this thing, how they're going to restart this season. Shams Charania of The Athletic has a bunch of them listed. I guess the first thing I would say is I heard Brian Windhorst of ESPN said that there's a chance they finally go with the 1-16 format as opposed to keeping it East-West, since everybody is under the same bubble. Anyway, like, the travel issues that you would have with 1-16 don't exist anymore. You're all in the same place.
Yeah, the NBA actually does that's interesting. Because the NBA is the one league that actually gives a damn about geography when they come up with their divisions and whatnot. And so that's one of the things that's prevented going 1-16. I don't know. I wonder, is that too much experimentation where everything's going to be so different to begin with? Do you just go ahead and throw out your entire playoff format when you don't need to? Because you don't really need to, right?
I think they've wanted to go to 1-16 logically for a long time in the playoffs. But the possibility you could run into is that Boston and LA are facing off in a, you know, in a 3-14. You know what I mean? Like, or probably more likely Brooklyn and LA are facing off in a 3-14. And now you've got a first round matchup where teams are going, you know, teams are taking 5-hour flights across country just to play games.
I think that this is the thing with me, Sean, is with basketball, look, you played 80% of the regular season, right? I think as much as you can, I'd like to preserve the things that you already knew and expected.
Yeah.
You know, you play 80% of a season thinking there's going to be 8 seeds in both conferences, and those conferences are going to play each other at the end.
Yeah.
That feels like, as much as you can preserve that, try to keep it. Whereas in baseball, I'm more like, hey, you haven't played a single game. I basically want no rules to apply in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, just do whatever it takes to get as creative as you need to be. Basketball, I think you can try to adhere to the traditional format.
I think that makes sense. I think that's logical. So here's what they're looking at. They sent out a survey to the GMs on Thursday to get their take on it. Ultimately, it's going to be decided by Adam Silver and the owners, but they wanted to get input. And the notable topics discussed were, it was a conference call, actually. They didn't send out a survey. It was a conference call with GMs. A two-step approach to the start of games, two-week training camp in a team's market, and then a two-week quarantine training camp. Players are resistant to, these are all coronavirus things, resistant to nasal coronavirus. Once in the bubble,
yeah, so
the teams can share medical services, things like that.
Yeah, I guess the players are saying, look, if you can do the blood test, we'd prefer that than having that swab of my brain, as they describe it.
Right.
I know a couple people that have had the test now that say it's no big deal.
Okay.
It's just like they said it didn't feel any different to them than the flu one. Maybe that's just them. I don't know.
Remember my nephew,
the one who Bill O'Brien gave him type 1 diabetes?
That's not true.
By trading DeAndre Hopkins? Look, Sean. They traded DeAndre Hopkins. 2 hours later, my nephew is in a life flight being treated for being in a near diabetic coma.
I cannot argue with those two occurrences happening.
That's rock. That's just simple logic, Sean.
You're probably right.
A happens, then B happens.
True.
A caused B. It's as simple as that,
that's
all right?
Yep.
And he's a huge – look, DeAndre Hopkins is his favorite player. Anyway, he had it done. He said it was no big deal.
Oh, this,
He was also nearly in a diabetic coma when they did it. But,
So they could have done anything.
Yeah.
I think here's the part people really are interested in, because I think we're all going to assume the players are healthy and under, you know, the proper supervision when they take the court. Advance directly to the playoffs. So if you're out of the – just take the 16 teams that are in the playoffs – now and just start the playoffs. A playoff plus option, which would expand the number of teams with the opportunity to play via some sort of play-in tournament. Or they're looking at maybe like a World Cup type format where they go into groups and then the top two teams out of each group come out and play in some sort of playoff format.
I feel like going directly to the playoffs is, in this season in particular, I mean, it's fair to the Eastern Conference. The Wizards are 5.5 games behind the Magic for the 8th seed. I suppose in the Western Conference, where you have the Grizzlies still, let's see, Grizzlies are 3.5 games ahead of the Blazers. But then you have the Blazers, the Pelicans, and the Kings all gunked up at 9. I don't know. I don't care about that. Maybe if the Rockets were in the 8th seed or in the 9th seed,
I'd care a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd care a lot more. I think if anything, I want to go directly to the playoffs, because the Rockets, we have no idea if that blip in the radar for small ball was going to be a long-term thing or a short-term thing. But they need as few games as possible. Get right into the playoffs. Don't get worn down.
It sounds weird to say this because they're an older team, but I feel like the layoff's been long enough, I feel like the Rockets have guys who are staying in shape. I'm with you. I want to get this thing started. I don't need 8 more regular season games. I think the only reason they would play more regular season games is for money. That's the only reason it makes sense to play more regular season. There is no logical reason to there's no basketball reason during a pandemic to take teams that are out of the playoffs. Certainly teams that are mathematically eliminated from even being in the playoffs with 7 or 8 more games, to play any more basketball games.
Well, and then that's where, okay, the other idea is to have a play-in tournament.
Yeah.
So don't start with the regular season, but do a play-in tournament. I think that would probably get huge ratings.
Yes.
I guess it's a little bit, in the West, it makes more sense. Like, as we just described, the Grizzlies are in the 8th seed, but like barely behind them are the Blazers, the Pelicans, and the Kings. They're all gunked up there for the 8th and 9th seeds. Where in the Eastern Conference, the Magic have a pretty healthy lead over the Wizards and everybody else. I feel like the Magic would have a reason to say, like, hey, we're kind of getting jobbed here when we have to try to play in when we're already clearly ahead of those other teams.
I do, Seth, I do think as you were just rattling off those teams, I'm pulling up the standings right now. I think that, you know what? I think there's going to be some sort of play-in tournament, and here's why. And I look at the West, and you just rattled off the teams in the West.
Yeah.
The play. Think about if you had a play-in tournament for teams. I think where it makes sense is you do like 7 versus 10 and 8 versus 9. That's what they've actually discussed before coronavirus of doing in future years, of having some sort of play-in tournament to make the teams that are on the to make teams stop tanking, basically, to make teams that are in the mix for the playoffs stop tanking. Seth, think of the names that would be involved in a play-in tournament in teams 7 through 10 in the Western Conference. Keep in mind, the NBA is going to be trying to recoup as much as they can financially, trying to pop as big a number as they can. You would have Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, Damian Lillard, and Zion Williamson. I am telling you right now, there is going to be a play-in tournament for the 7 and 8 seeds involving those four teams.
That's a really good point. And
I would watch that.
And this is where the Rockets in that instance definitely don't want there to be any kind of a regular season, because given the way they were finishing up 1-4 before the pandemic break, they're sitting right there at the sixth seed, you know, 1.5 games ahead of the Mavericks. They would find themselves perilously close to being part of the play-in tournament.
Well, and the only reason they wouldn't be in the play-in tournament, not the only reason, but they have the same number of wins as the Mavericks. The Mavericks have just played 3 more games and they lost all 3 of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, of all the things that you could, and granted, Oklahoma City has the same record as the Rockets too. So just record wise, there's a bunch of teams kind of clumped together. Even Utah's only a game ahead of those teams. But boy, Seth, a 7 versus 10 and an 8 versus 9, where it's just a couple of 2 out of 3 series to play in, that is some major, major star power right there.
That's the ticket right there. And then I guess the only other question becomes, all right, these other teams that are lottery teams, are they upset about losing out on 20% of their revenue? You know, are they going to somehow, you know, the Golden State Warriors are still trying – they've got a brand new stadium that they need to pay off.
Where the seats are like $1 billion a seat.
Yeah,
like it's just so expensive. Yeah.
It's Warriors. Crazy. That's the one good thing that's come out of all of this, isn't it? Is that the Warriors at least have had to experience and suffer some pain.
Yeah.
No amount of pain will ever take away those championships, unfortunately.
No.
But we can pray for misfortune as much as possible.
And they're probably going to be pretty good again.
Yeah, Aisha's ill-conceived restaurant there at Memorial City Center there, that went under.
Yeah. That was good. That was satisfying.
Well, that was just dumb of her. That was really, really dumb of her. It was, hey, where should we put it? I don't know. Let's one of the NBA cities where people despise my husband. I think that makes the most sense.
With the genre of food that we take the most parochial pride in around here, barbecue.
You can go buy his ugly-ass sneakers at three different places here at City Center.
True. How much can you believe in a documentary centered around a known cheater? We will discuss next. So it was the first Sunday in a long, long time where we didn't have any Michael Jordan topics the next day. No Last Dance, but ESPN is keeping the 30 for 30 train moving here, and we got the first 2 hours of what is, I guess, eventually going to be a 4-hour saga, two-hour episodes on Lance Armstrong. I'm not a big cycling fan, but he's a very compelling character, obviously, Seth. Did you watch the first 2 hours of the Lance Armstrong 30 for 30?
I've watched the first hour and 20 minutes or so of it. I think that, well, the fact that you're not a huge cycling fan, I think, just puts you in league with everybody else that was a fan of Lance Armstrong back in the day, right?
Yes.
I think he was almost, like, there are a whole lot of guys my age that are riding around in tight shorts and a jersey because they got into cycling because of Lance Armstrong, right? He was the Tiger Woods of cycling in America.
Yes,
he got a whole lot of people, a whole lot more people into it, like casual. And then he brought a whole lot of casual fans to it because it was an incredible story, Sean.
It was.
Now, whenever an American does well in the Tour de France, like Greg LeMond back in the 1980s, he was a big deal back then.
Yeah.
Like, they do become a big deal. But then you had the double whammy of he overcame extremely advanced cancer in his testicles, his lungs, and his brain to come back and win these Tour de Frances.
Yeah, it was, I think, you and I talked about this last week. I think Lance Armstrong is probably the biggest fall from grace, or maybe biggest disparity between peak popularity and the nadir of his popularity for any athlete that didn't harm somebody physically.
That didn't know Jay Simpson.
That
somebody.
Did right or
allegedly
or assault
allegedly.
Somebody or
only in a civil. It was only convicted in a civil suit, Sean.
Fair
so
enough.
We don't know.
Fair enough. But that wasn't at least involved in allegations of hurting somebody. When you think about it, there's no in the sports world, Seth. There is again, barring harming another human being, there is no more. There's no more admirable thing to come back from. Like this guy was on his deathbed. And there is no more completely scorned, you are shoved aside negative thing than cheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Than cheating,
yeah.
Lying about the cheating, and then finally being forced to admit that you were a cheater. Like he has been at the two furthest ends of the spectrum, not involving harming another human being. Recovering from cancer. I didn't realize, Seth, that he was given such a small percentage chance to live.
Like,
I had forgotten about that. Like testicular cancer is what you think of when you think of Lance Armstrong, at least casually. And that's a type of cancer that has a higher recovery rate than most types of cancer. I had forgotten it spread to his lungs and his brain and everything else. And so I had that take last week about it being, wow, a cancer recovery. That was before I even had been reminded as to just how improbable the recovery was, just that he's even here, let alone winning races.
Right, because he ignored it for a long time,
right.
And just thought it was because he was riding or what have you. You know, he's on a bike all day or on a seat, sitting on a hard biking seat all day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was big. It wasn't like one of those things where people overly dramatize it by saying the doctors claimed I would never live. If anything, the doctors were telling him he had a better chance than he did, just because to give him some kind of hope.
Yeah.
Because they thought that it was pretty much he was a goner. So yeah, it was a big, big deal. And he came back. Now, what the documentary so far has done is they kind of set the stage with the fact that cycling has always had, you know, we know going way back, a culture of doping.
Yes.
The way that the people in the documentary describe it was that before EPO showed up, that's the stuff that increases your red blood cell count. They did a lot of stuff that didn't seem to be necessarily so effective that it felt like cheating, I suppose. Then EPO showed up and it just was blowing people out of the waters. And Lance Armstrong, in the course of a year, went from saying, we need to crack down on this. This is ridiculous. This is crazy. To Lance Armstrong giving in to taking EPO and, you know, getting all the benefits from it.
Yeah, and it was interesting. And just to kind of quantify the effect for EPO, this doping agent that Lance Armstrong and several others were using, there was a race, there was one of his teammates, I think, that was doing vignettes in this 30 for 30, explained it in a really interesting way, that the difference between the first place biker and the last place biker at the Tour de France is like 2%.
Yeah.
You know, it's not much of the overall chunk of the race, and EPO gives you a boost of what they estimate to be 10%. So this is something that just, if you're not using that, you are lagging way, way behind.
Right. So because he went from winning the world championship to the next year feeling like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What's going on here? And it was as a lot of other cyclists were saying. So they're not making excuses for him. The other interesting thing that about this documentary for me so far is that it was very open in the beginning. I almost feel like this maybe was edited last week because of some of the accusations about the Jordan documentary.
Yeah.
There were accusations that the Jordan documentary was too biased in favor of Michael Jordan because he had editing control. They actually show a couple people being interviewed early on saying, kind of breaking down the fourth wall, where they're showing them talking to the interviewer saying, Look, this is going to be biased towards Lance because I know Lance, and Lance is going to, so like, I don't know how you're going to present this, but they're almost just like throwing their hands up and saying, whatever. Yeah, here, I'll do your interview. So I don't know. They're very transparent about this. And I think so far they've given a pretty unbiased look at everything.
Okay. So the story at the very beginning, the part that resonated with me, because I'm not a biker, you know what I mean? Like I always look, when it's about a sport that I'm not super familiar with or don't follow very closely, I just look at the human interaction stories that are in it. And it was the very first scene where Lance Armstrong talked about how the first few years after he finally admitted that he had been taking performance enhancing drugs while he was biking, he expected to go out in public and just be like William Wallace getting marched through the street at the end of Braveheart with things being thrown at him and people yelling at him.
Just yelling at him all the time.
Like catcalls and things like that. He said he got nothing for about 5 years. And then he was out to dinner and some fan, you know, some person, citizen, came up to him and said, "Are you Lance Armstrong?" He said, "Yeah." And he flipped him the bird and said, "Bleep you, Lance Armstrong." And he said it over and over again to the point where the crew that was with the guy saying it, they all started doing it, like gathering around. He painted a picture like it was he was gathering around him like he was Daniel LaRusso and the Cobra Kai was gathering around him in Karate Kid. But instead of kicking the crap out of him, they were just flipping the bird and saying, "Bleep you, Lance Armstrong." And my feeling on that, Seth, I whenever I hear stories of fans that get up in athletes' faces because they're over emotional about an athlete failing or cheating or whatever the case may be, I always feel the hardest part for me to reconcile as a talk show host in the sports format is that I feel like those people are the biggest losers in the world. I want to point them out to be the biggest losers in the world. And yet at the same time, there's an element to where their passion, channeled properly, obviously, but the passion to which they have that gets them into a mood where they're doing those things is a big reason why you and I have jobs in what we do. You know what I mean? Like if there weren't that level of passion out there somewhere in the sports world, there would be no need to have sports talk shows.
Well, I think that the thing about this is, I think there are a lot of his fans that just felt betrayal, you know, like they felt like they had just become almost, it had almost become a religious movement, right? Those Livestrong, there wasn't a corporate boardroom you could go into that didn't have a Livestrong bracelet on it.
Yep.
Because cycling tends to be a more affluent pursuit of people. These bikes cost $6,000.
Yes.
So it became almost a religion in a lot of ways. And it would be like finding that your Lord and Savior was a fraud, you know, because to them, that's what they felt like. I would say that the problem that Lance Armstrong ran into is, I think, the same thing that is happening with the Astros. It's the same thing that happened to Barry Bonds. When there is a culture of cheating, ultimately you get punished for being the best cheater. Like you get, and it's almost society and the sport's way of being able to kind of deflect any responsibility from themselves or anybody else by focusing in on one person. That's why I feel like, honestly, no matter what had happened in the Red Sox, in the Red Sox scandal, it wasn't going to supersede and take the place of the acrimony that people feel for the Astros, because they've got their demon, right? They've got their boogeyman now.
Yep.
And likewise with Lance Armstrong, it became, well, you know what? This guy did it better than anybody else. He must be a much worse and much more evil cheater than everybody else who's cheating. Oh, and by the way, he's kind of a jerk. You know, like just like Barry Bonds, like, you know what? They're kind of a jerk. This is nice. Let's go ahead and be sure that we make this guy the focal point of everything we despise because it's very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a really good point. Do you believe that story, by the way, of fans walking up to him, flipping in the bird at a restaurant or whatever?
I kind of believed it at first, but then he claims that he called up the manager of the restaurant and he says that he got his revenge by paying for their dinners and their drinks. He gave the restaurant the credit card and paid for it and said something like, "I love you, Lance," or something like that.
He said it was
that
from part, Lance Armstrong sends his love.
Yeah, that part almost felt to me a little too much like, okay, this is him trying to show something here. Mm-hmm. Like he's trying to show how he's evolved or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the documentary is very clear. Like, man, he was a jerk. Like he was an arrogant little punk, you know, and he had that reputation as such. So by the time that they had everything on him, there was a sense all along with Lance Armstrong, because I followed it a lot more closely than you, Sean, that almost if he had been less of an arrogant, brash jerk, that the French media especially might not have just turned him into the object of all of their scorn and everything. That there was a little bit of like, here's what you get, you dirty American.
You need to do some more of the French accent. I'm just letting you know. Like I'm hoping the French come up more in the part two of this 30 for 30.
We could do a Bill O'Brien, Pepe Le Pew character. Like where, you know, Pepe Le Pew, which I'm guessing they don't show those anymore because Pepe, every single damn episode involving Pepe Le Pew was a Me Too moment.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Pepe would have gotten Me Too'd in the first 2 minutes of his job. Yeah.
So for the kids, here, kids, this is just this innocent cartoon about a skunk who wanted to make it with an attractive cat, and he would press himself against her all the time, very much against her will, and despite her repeated protestations.
Right.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm guessing we'll never see another. It was a really awful Pepe Le Pew was. But I feel like sometimes Bill O'Brien runs that organization a little bit like Pepe Le Pew.
Lance, now I'm pivoting quickly.
Jack Easterby. Easterby. I know that you want this
Brandon Cooks.
I know you want this Grenard. But we will not have a Grenard. We will trade with the Detroit Lions.
What is the world?
Qu'est-ce que c'est, Sacre Bleu, Jackie Stubby? What have you done? Where is my trade with the Detroit Lions?
Detroit. What did you think of Lance Armstrong's stepfather, Terry Armstrong?
What a weirdo creep. What a weirdo.
I like the part where he took total credit for Lance Armstrong's success.
I was having a technical glitch. I was up late last night trying to record that onto my, through my system, and I couldn't get something to work. But yeah, this guy actually says, is Lance Armstrong is saying, My stepdad, Terry Armstrong, who ended up adopting me, was kind of a jerk and just like a ridiculous taskmaster and whatnot. And Terry Armstrong admits to this, but also says, you know, without me, Lance Armstrong doesn't become who he is today.
Right.
Like, oh, this guy.
Right.
Every picture you see of him is this kind of dopey, goofy 1970s happy guy with a mustache that was taking on doing the right thing. But then this image emerges and he talks real soft, right?
Yeah.
But then you can tell, oh, wow, this guy had some kind of a power trip over Lance. And
yeah, he might have been an abusive stepfather.
Yeah. Like, yeah. When Lance talks about him, boy, you can tell Lance, when Lance is talking in this documentary, this dude just, he's not operating. Like mentally, he's got that same Jordan thing, right?
Yeah.
Where he's always thinking about an angle or a slight or something like that. That's the other big takeaway I would take from this. Man, first Jordan, now Lance Armstrong. You look at the level of almost, I want to say sociopathic behavior.
Yep.
It's almost like a societally acceptable level of sociopathy.
Yep.
Like just below the criminal level to where they're going to do whatever it takes. And I kept thinking like, wow, if somehow Jordan had been found to have been doping or something, whatever the equivalent to all the stuff that Lance Armstrong was doing, imagine how quick and vicious the backlash would have been because of the way he treated people.
Oh, well, and because of what you were talking about, Seth, with people going out there wearing the bracelets and buying the Pelotons. Nobody bought more merchandise than Michael Jordan fans buying shoes.
Yeah.
You know, like there would have been that backlash as well. All right, Ben, let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
The other big draw over the weekend from a TV standpoint, I'm assuming the Lance Armstrong 30 for 30 is going to do big numbers because there's not a ton else. It was good, but there's not a ton else to watch right now sports-wise. The big sporting event over the weekend, live sporting event, was the match between Peyton Manning / Tiger Woods versus Tom Brady / Phil Mickelson. Manning and Woods ended up winning the match. It was very entertaining in spots, a little slow starting, but they played in a monsoon in parts of this, but people didn't turn the channel at all, an average of 5.8 million viewers. To give you an idea, that's the Last Dance, which we've talked about being a ratings bonanza, averaged 5.6 million viewers. So, Seth, from a purely the metric of the average number of viewers watching this, granted, this was one afternoon, The Last Dance was 5 weeks, but it drew a bigger audience than that. What are we to read into that big audience? Is that just a function of, hey, there's nothing else to watch, or was it really something that was that compelling to you?
I don't think it was that compelling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that it didn't get the same levels that you're going to get for a playoff game or anything
right.
in any of the other sports other than the NHL. But I think that it was a combination of A, there's very little going on, and B, you had compelling personalities, right? You had Peyton Manning, who was genuinely very funny in this. I feel like this was one more opportunity for Peyton Manning, whether it be through here or that, Oh, what's the series that he's doing? The Peyton's Places. Like, he shows kind of a natural wit about him that isn't just scripted in television commercials. So there's that. And then you have Tiger Woods, who always pulls in people. You've got Tom Brady, who I think also showed a little bit more of his dry sense of humor and more personality than you typically see out of him. And then you've got Charles Barkley talking smack at him. It was a lot of good banter. I think if there's one thing to be learned from this, it's that, okay, you already knew that big names will draw people in. But I feel like you should almost select it for smack talk ability.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather see Peyton and Philip Rivers would probably be hilarious because they'd probably go back and forth at each other the entire time. That's what I'd like to see. Honestly, that was one thing I was a little bit let down with by The Last Dance was Michael Jordan's smack talking ability. I mean,
he's more just a bully than anything else.
Right. Like, his smack talking ability, it wasn't like he was witty like Muhammad Ali or anything. Yeah. It was just the fact that, you're right, like he was the best player on the court and he was going to make you feel even worse about yourself. But it was more of like a lethal force than it was a comedic force.
Seth, maybe the weirdest thing about the match is that it was an afternoon of golf and the greatest golfer in the history of the game was really faded into the background. Tiger Woods was sort of the least prominent, least compelling figure, for me at least, watching it. Both the football players I thought were compelling for different reasons. Peyton was really good golfing. He was excellent when it came to the interactive and the banter. Tom Brady had his high point with the bird. Tom Brady was compelling in that he was failing miserably and then hit a shot from 150 yards out. And I thought he was pretty good. I loved Phil Mickelson doing the teaching and the explaining to Brady along the way. I thought was excellent. And Charles Barkley was a big personality, kind of hovering over the whole thing. Tiger kind of faded into the background for me, at least.
He was just working on his game, but that brought something to it too. Because I think people were genuinely excited that Tiger looked good. Right?
He looked good. He looked really.
I just had an idea for a show now that I'm thinking about it. Because a lot of times the best smack talkers aren't the most marquee guys.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the marquee guys are just, they tend to be focused with their game and whatnot. But some of the guys just busting on each other in the locker room. There's just some world-class stuff in there that there's a level of ballsiness. Like some of the stuff that Gary Walker used to come up with was like funnier than anything you'd ever see on television or anything.
Yeah.
If you could get some of those guys together on a show, In the right circumstances, I feel like on a dead sports day that would crush it.
Yeah,
it just have the best smack talkers, like Shannon Sharpe and Warren Sapp were two players that were really well. No, Shannon Sharpe especially. Yeah. Shannon Sharpe was world class funny.
Yeah,
and would like tear guys down like in a funny way to where they didn't mind it. Like if you had Shannon Sharpe following Peyton Manning around on a golf course. And those two going at it, I feel like Shannon Sharpe could get into Peyton Manning's head.
The video of Shannon Sharpe when he was on the Broncos calling the National Guard on the phone on the sidelines was circulating this weekend on Twitter. Really funny.
And that stuff's like kind of cheesy and corny compared to like the actual stuff that he would do in a lot
on
from stories I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like he's doing that edited for television, lining up his post-career job.
Next
Is he
headline.
Doing television? Was Shannon Sharpe on television?
He does a show with Skip Bayless every day.
Oh, yeah, dang it. No, never mind. His brother, Sterling.
Sterling
Sharpe. I haven't seen Sterling.
I haven't seen Sterling on TV recently. So
He was really, he was a mainstay for a long time.
Yeah. Keeping in line with other teams around Major League Baseball, the Astros opened Minute Maid Park and their spring training facility in West Palm Beach, Florida, for limited individual workouts for players beginning yesterday. So, Seth, James Click, the general manager, said about six players are scheduled to be at each facility on Monday for staggered individual workouts. As someone who wants baseball back as soon as possible, who is getting a little tired of the two sides staring at each other and wants a deal to get done this week, I was excited that players are back in the building at least. Good news.
It's good news. I know they almost it felt like it was delivered in such a way as people were saying like don't get your hopes up too much. This is going to be very. I feel like baseball is trying to be very careful in not making it look like the whole gang's back together too soon. So they announced this almost apologetically, like hey look everybody, there's going to be spread out and staggered. There's only going to be one coach on site. It's all good.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we got you.
Yeah.
Just get in there. Get in there, scamps.
I like how your defensive over-explaining voice is that of a 13-year-old who's balls just dropped.
Well, everybody.
Hey, hey, listen.
I don't really know how everything's going to work, but we'll just figure it out.
So the Minute Maid, the return to Minute Maid Park for some Astro players got me kind of excited. Meanwhile, the president of the University of Michigan is a big negative Nelly when it comes to college football coming back. His name is Mark Schlissel. He's the president of the University of Michigan. And he told the Wall Street Journal over the weekend that any decision the school makes for this coming fall will last the entire academic year. Quote, if there is no on-campus instruction, then there won't be intercollegiate athletics, at least for Michigan, who Dr. Schlissel is an immunologist by training. So in terms of being strict, in terms of the discipline of your university president, the one that's probably going to be the most strict is an immunologist. He added that there is currently, quote, some degree of doubt as to whether there will be college athletics anywhere, at least in the fall. Seth, how many phone calls do you think Dr. Schlissel got from some of his compadres that are presidents at other schools in the Big Ten going, I would stop doing interviews if I were you?
I don't know. There's a big political downside, I suppose, to trying to influence somebody towards like the less cautious side of things,
yeah.
For lack of a better term, I suppose. So I don't know. I think everybody's just feeling it out right now. Did you happen to see the article about the last event that happened before everything shut down, or maybe we should call the first event one of the first pro events to happen since everything shut down was a rodeo event.
Okay.
And the rodeo organizers got calls from like basically every major league in this hemisphere.
Yeah.
Because they just want to know, okay, where are we going with this? I think any calls to the Michigan president are going to be more, okay, what are you thinking? What do you need? Like, what assurances do you need? Or what's your benchmark for how do we move ahead? The worst thing that happened in Michigan this weekend, Sean, was when Michigan landed this big recruit, Jaden Hood.
Yeah.
And at the end of this video they announced, it's being ballyhooed as Jim Harbaugh doing a flip. So I got
all excited.
Like I thought,
I saw
like,
the
Jim
headline.
Harbaugh, he did a flip? Like, no, he did not do a flip. He did a cartwheel and a bad one at that.
Yeah.
And somehow people are calling that a flip. This is driving me insane. This is no better than when they call a bench clearing shoving match, a brawl. You know?
Yeah.
It was a bench clearing stare down.
Right. Next headline. Seth, did you see over the weekend that Carlos Hyde has a new home? Carlos Hyde, the Texans' former running back.
I don't want to admit that I didn't see it, so
okay,
I'm just being quiet. Seems like the kind of thing I should have known.
It seems like the kind of thing that a good co-host would know the answer to before he asked the question of his co-host.
I'm going to tell you, okay, when did he sign? I'm going to blame Landry for this somehow.
I think he signed on Friday.
That's what I thought. Okay, I'm going to blame Landry for this.
That's my bad.
Landry, I listened to Landry for 7 minutes talking about how this was a sign that the Texans misjudged something, but he never actually gave me the payoff of like, did Carlos Hyde sign somewhere for less than what the Texans paid him or what have you?
I think he signed after he did the Curious Case of El Guapo on the show. So, yeah, it was Friday afternoon. He agreed to it.
I felt like Landry was building up to it,
yeah.
Like what it was going to be, but I had to get out of the car.
I got you.
So he was doing a good – Landry was doing a good job of building up to it, but
right.
I just absolutely had to get out of the car at
right.
that point. I had to pee so bad.
He signed a one-year deal with the Seahawks, just so you know, yeah. For a maximum of $4 million if he hits all his incentives.
So the Texans reportedly offered him
$10 million with no incentives, just bebopping and scotting everywhere. Yeah.
You would assume the guaranteed money in that was probably at least $3 or $4 million,
I suppose. I would say probably the first year guaranteed, yeah.
Yeah. So we know that the Texans when they want something, they don't dither around. Was just, you know, they don't just dip their toe in the water. They say, hey, Eric Murray, here's a whole bunch of money. Hey, Randall Cobb, how much were you making last year?
Yeah.
How about triple that?
Yeah.
So, that's what they did with Carlos Hyde.
Would you rather have Carlos Hyde on a two-year, $10 million deal or David Johnson on the deal that they've got him on right now? Which is like 1 year. It's a year for
They're
$11 million, and you owe him another $2 million next year.
I guess I would I guess I want David Johnson. Well, it's not guaranteed next year. No, I want Carlos Hyde.
You'd rather have the lower deal, kind of knowing what you're getting with Carlos.
Yeah, I'd rather have that.
Yeah. Did you see?
I'm trying to be positive here, man. I'm trying to be a fan here.
I got you.
Why'd you have to bring up David Johnson's contract? You see,
I'm just trying to provide
about all that guaranteed money.
I'm trying to provide some context on the topic that we're talking about.
I feel like Carlos Hyde's contract would have been at least more in line with what he should be getting.
I think most Texan fans. I honestly think most Texan fans, if he got 2 years, $10 million, would probably be okay with it until you realize like there was no interest in him out there in the market. We would have never found out that there was zero interest in Carlos Hyde at that price tag. You know, the only
interest. Oh, that's right. Well, except that, I still would have been skeptical of that. Look, Carlos Hyde was not impressive over the last, third of the season or so.
Yeah.
He really fizzled out, and you started to see a lot of his success was more based on Deshaun Watson loosening things up for him than it was anything else. It wasn't like Carlos Hyde was actually just taking the bull by the horns and putting this team on his back.
Right. By the way, DeAndre Hopkins is still out here liking tweets talking about how bad the DeAndre Hopkins trade was. Someone screen capped it over the weekend. Baltimore Beatdown screen capped somebody tweeting. The sad part is that and this is someone tweeting it who's not verified or anything like that. This is just a regular dude. The sad part is that the DeAndre Hopkins to Cardinals trade was worse than that suggestion, and it was executed by a man who gets paid to do it. So I don't know what the original suggestion was. This tells me, and DeAndre Hopkins liked that tweet, which Seth tells me that DeAndre Hopkins searches on his name. He is a Tyrann Mathieu level name searcher because he wasn't tagged in it. It was just his name was in the tweet, DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, but people forward stuff to those guys. They think they're doing him a favor. You know, like there are fans that think like, hey, I'm gonna do DeAndre Hopkins a favor and I'm gonna show him this tweet. So I don't know. I don't think DeAndre Googles himself.
No.
I think he's got a certain kind of above it all attitude.
Yeah.
You know.
Which is why he liked the tweet, because he's above it all.
Is that above it all with a little bit of a smirk.
I got you.
He's aloof. Yeah. He's aloof, right?
Yeah.
But if somebody forwards it to him, like, he just puts a little like on there.
Right. Next headline. Did you see Eli is on Twitter now?
I saw that. I was confused by that, too. I guess this is part of growing old. I'm way more confused about stuff on social media.
Well, Eli got
so he joins Twitter.
He joins Twitter. And, Seth, if you watch your timeline closely over the weekend, then I'm sure you know why. He played it off the first few tweets like, hey, it's just good to be here. And he's making little snide comments. And then you couldn't look at your Twitter feed without getting at least one tweet per hour from Eli Manning about Frank's Red Hots. It's Eli on Sunday. My plans for today: support Peyton, and bring some heat to the competition. Join me and Frank's Red Hot to hashtag tweet some heat during today's golf.
You know what's interesting of that? If he's getting paid for those, he's supposed to put a little hashtag there. I'm gonna dime him out now that we live in an era of diming people out on social media. I'm gonna dime him out. I'm gonna get into his pocket there.
He's
got 288,000 followers already.
Yeah, I know. He's pretty bland. He's pretty bland.
I think he's got more personality than you think.
Well, I liked him. You pointed this out Saturday Night Live. I went back and watched his skits on Saturday Night Live. He was funny. They set him up nicely on there.
He's more of a, I think he, it's funny, I think he's probably more of a real guy than Peyton Manning is.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd both be fun to hang out with, don't get me wrong. Eli doesn't care about almost anything in terms of the records or all of the accolades or anything, where Peyton cares very much about it.
Throwing picks. He doesn't care about that. Whatever. I got two Super Bowls. I beat Brady in two Super Bowls.
Somebody points out that Carlos Hyde played with a torn labrum and head surgery after the season. That was Joan.
Yeah. Joan pointed that out. We didn't.
I know upper body injuries don't do it for me for running backs.
Even a torn labrum?
Nah.
That sounds
painful. Everybody's got a torn labrum out there.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.